Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. Here's what you need to know.
The night sky lit up.
Powerful explosion rocked a giant oil rig.
The explosion was spectacular and catastrophic. Mobile offshore drilling unit.
It was a harrowing ordeal as workers scrambled to abandon the rig.
Pressurized wells with big heavy equipment and of course with highly volatile gas and oil.
5,000 feet of water.
We have information now that this rig has gone under.
It is starting to sink.
One of the most sophisticated drilling rigs in the world, the Deepwater Horizon.
The Gulf of Mexico has been a fertile ground for oil and gas companies to drill for fuel since the 1930s. Today, the region produces over a fifth of the oil and gas in the United States. Oil that lies beneath the ocean floor is the product of organic material, such as plants and animals, which has been trapped below ground for millions of years. Over time, pressure and heat transforms the organic material into hydrocarbons, which form the building blocks of oil and natural gas. As the oil and gas collects in between layers of rocks deep below the surface, energy companies must drill wells in order to extract the resources. BP, formerly known as the British Petroleum Company, is one of the seven world's largest supermajors in the oil industry. In 2001, the company leased the Deepwater Horizon rig from the world's largest oil rig contractor, Transocean, with plans to search for oil in the Gulf of Mexico. BP hired Halliburton, an oil field services company, to assist in operating the rig. In 2009, BP began exploration of the Macondo Prospect, an oil region off the coast of Louisiana. When the Marianas oil rig they planned to use was damaged by Hurricane Ida, BP enlisted Deepwater Horizon to do the job. Deepwater Horizon had just drilled the deepest well in history and was known as one of the most powerful rigs in the world. Drilling commenced in February 2010, behind schedule. And it was Deepwater Horizon's job to get the project back on track. In the early evening of April 20th, there was one crucial test to ensure the well was not leaking before the Horizon could plug the well and move on. Despite the test showing that gas was in fact leaking into the well, the results were either misinterpreted or downplayed. At 9:38 p.m., drilling mud began gushing up from the well, a sign that gaseous hydrocarbons were shooting up the pipe in what is called a kick. A few minutes later, gas covered large areas of the rig, caught fire from an ignition source, and caused an eruption that could be seen from miles away. As fireballs hundreds of feet high enveloped the rig, crew members frantically tried to cut off the well to stop the release of gas. When all measures failed, most managed to escape on lifeboats. 36 hours later, the entire Deepwater Horizon capsized. As it sank, the rig damaged the pipe and oil began spilling from the well and did not stop for 87 days. After countless failures to stop the leakage of up to 60,000 barrels of oil per day, as well as measures to remove the oil from the Gulf, on July 15th, a device was successfully attached to cap the pipe. It wouldn't be until September 19th that the well was declared officially dead and no greater threat. Fun facts, aka death stats. Of the 126 workers on the rig, 11 were killed when the Deepwater Horizon exploded and sank. Over the next 87 days, an estimated 3.19 million barrels, or approximately 134 million gallons of oil, spilled into the Gulf. The U.S. federal government ultimately estimated the total discharge at 4.9 million barrels, or 210 million gallons, making it the largest oil spill in U.S. history. It was reported that up to 167,600 turtles, 800,000 coastal birds, and 200,000 offshore birds died because of the spill. In 2013, it was reported that a record number of turtles and dolphins have died due to the long-term effects of the spill, as well as only 20% of pregnant dolphins successfully carrying their babies to full term. Over 1,000 miles of shoreline on the Gulf of Mexico, from Texas to Florida, was impacted by the oil from the Deepwater Horizon blowout. Much of this area has been cleaned, but eroded shorelines are taking longer to recover, and erosion rates have accelerated in these areas. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello, everyone.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today is Craig Anstent. Hi, Craig.
Hello, how you doing?
Thank you so much for joining us today to speak about this terrible natural, not natural disaster, but environmental disaster. Craig, we'd like to start the show off by asking our guest, what is something that is recently alarming you? What is something that's keeping you up at night?
Oh, boy. Well,
let's just dive right in, jump in.
Maybe I sleep too much and nothing really keeps me up at night. No, I would say, well, the whole Ukraine thing's starting to freak me out because it just seems like that's going to happen whether anyone wants it to or not. So I guess that. I'm going from that to those automatic shutoffs that are being put in new cars that are going to be built after, I think it's 2026. You know about this?
No, tell me.
Do tell.
They're putting kill switches in any new cars sold after 2026, and it's under the auspices of we'll be able to prevent drunk drivers. Basically, almost like a breathalyzer thing in every single car.
Wow.
Which means at any point, you know, not conspiracy guy, but the ability for someone to remotely shut off your car at any time.
Yeah.
That's That does freak me out. And apparently that guy, you know, someone might, will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that got signed through. Like, that's coming.
That's happening.
That's like a U.S. only thing. Like, every U.S. car is going to have a kill switch.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And someone is controlling that.
Yeah. Someone can hack into anything these days.
Dude, interesting.
It's one thing to, I remember, I'm sorry to go off on this tangent, but police had been working on these electromagnetic pulses that they were going to run on the front of cop cars to where they could get behind someone like in a high speed pursuit and trigger this. And it would shoot an electromagnetic pulse that would destroy the computer in the car, which would make the car stop. Mm. This was something that was developed and they didn't use it because they're like, well, you know, you're going 70 miles an hour. The car turns off. Power steering goes out. The car loses control.
Sounds very dangerous. Yeah.
Can, you know, all the other people that can get hurt from that. So now this is this, I mean, I just think it's going to be linked to like, you know, you go over the speed limit, they'll know and they'll automatically debit your bank account or something for a, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, you rolled a stop sign, $50 gone out of your bank. You know, like it just seems like it's all going to be linked to this. I don't know. All right. So that's what keeps me up.
I love how you literally started, oh, nothing keeps me up at night. I sleep good. I'm more worried about,
I'm more worried about car stuff than I am the war in Ukraine, which is pretty pathetic.
No. Anyway. I mean, it sounds like you quickly spiral, which means that you're in very good company. So welcome to the show.
You should go back to the olden days of horse and carriage.
Well, I'll tell you what.
No one can hack that.
Yeah, I mean, I still drive my car is from 1996. I have a Miata.
There you go.
And I'm like, I can work on it. I know how to fix it. I don't got to, no one's, it sounds crazy, but it's like, no, I'd like to be able to, I don't want to have to take my car to a programmer to fix it.
Whatever.
Well, I sound like an old man.
Look, you know, we'll know it's you when we hear the Miata coming down the block. We'll know it's Craig coming our way. Hey. So let's dive in because there's so much to cover. And I just want to start off by doing like reading this quick account from some of the survivors, the people that were actually on the Deepwater Horizon right during the explosion. And this is, from the New York Times. And it says, Mr. Holloway and Mr. Barron were working on the main deck when Mr. Holloway happened to glance up at the drilling floor. He couldn't believe it. Drilling mud was gushing up from the well just like a water fountain. It would be 9 minutes before the first explosion, well data shows. 9 precious minutes. The drilling crew had trained for blowouts. Floor hands like Mr. Holloway were the crucial first responders. A driller could call blowout and time their response. This usually involved quickly installing a special valve on the drilling pipe to end the imagined blowout. But confronted with the real thing for the first time, Mr. Holloway realized there were no floor hands on the drilling floor to respond. And it goes on. This is a very long article with a lot of accounts, but I highly recommend if people are interested. Goes on. This is another account. The first big explosion centered on engine 3, investigators believe. A second explosion centered on engine 6, caught in the crossfire where Mr. Brown's engine control room and Mr. Williams' electronics shop. Mr. Williams was contemplating the remains of his computer when everything exploded. A door smashed his forehead, blood streaming down his face. He clenched a pen light in his mouth and began crawling. He got to another door, only to be blown 30 feet back by the second blast. He began crawling again. He climbed across 2 men in the engine control room. He assumed they were dead because they did not respond. In fact, all 4 men in the engine control room were alive and did survive. All over the horizon, the explosion hit crew members who until then had been oblivious to the threat. In the galley, Kenneth Roberts was washing dishes. The explosion knocked him out. I woke up under a table, he said. Virginia Stevens was working in the laundry. The blast left her trapped and battered. No warning, no nothing. Joseph Keith, running from the lifeboat, stumbled on Mr. Burkine, who was face down in a pool of blood without a pulse. His head caved in. On the other side of the deck, Mr. Sandwell was blown to the back of his crane cab by the second explosion. All I know is the whole deck blew up, he recalled. A fireball hundreds of feet high enveloped the derrick and wrapped itself around his cabin. He could feel the heat building. He put his arms over his head and prepared for the end. So it sounds like, first of all, from everything I've read, it sounds like there was little warning. No alarms.
No.
Nothing until the explosion. Or if there was any warning, it was like immediate. It's like impending doom happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's crazy also to think about what these people that are living in a little community out there. And that, you know, knowing something like this could happen at any time, it's just an interesting way to live. It just sort of that article really paints the picture of what.
Right.
That
would you see pictures of these oil rigs, and because they're in the middle of the ocean, you can't really get the scale in your mind of how big those things are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, big enough to, what was there, 129 people on board?
Yes.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's
a lot.
I mean, even still now, the only shots you see of it are like from a helicopter with the ocean. You can't, there's nothing to scale it with.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
Right, Craig. And I was reading somewhere that it's like, it was as high as one of these big cathedrals in Europe. You know, it's like, imagine one of those massive cathedrals, just like in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was picturing it almost like, I mean, actually very much like the Eiffel Tower, like maybe halfway up.
Yeah.
The Eiffel Tower.
Just it does look, kind of has like those four feet.
Yeah, like the,
claw.
Like, almost like a quad pod.
Is but it massive. Quad pod? Just like massive, massive.
To me, it's crazy. Like, how did we even know? How do we even know how to do this? Like,
when I was brushing up on this and like watching these, I'm like, whoever came up with this, I mean, it's the most brilliant. Like, how do you even?
I know.
And then they came up with oil drilling, you know, in the late 1800s.
Right.
Like, what? Like,
and like, let's bring it to the deep, deep boat. It's like, it's already hard enough on land.
It is.
Why do we go so deep out into the? Because that's where the oil is. And you know why we need the oil, Craig? So you can drive your Miata.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's right.
I mean, this is kind of related, but I'd gone on a Howard Hughes kick like 2 years ago. Just read like 5 or 6 biographies on him. His money came from his father inventing and patenting the oil drill bits. That's where all of Hughes's money came from. Like, even when he owned RKO Studios, he was financing all those movies he was just bleeding out money from the oil company.
Wow.
And everyone was like, oh, Howard Hughes, this great businessman. No. He just, anyway, so that's how far back that kind of money and like technology goes. To even, if you came to me 2022 and you're like, hey buddy, here's $10 million, just invent me a drill bit that can go 800 feet underground.
It does tell you how valuable oil is at the end of the day, because if you can basically, what, you know, the thing costs hundreds of millions of dollars to build, and I'm sure the manpower and hours spent, you know, it was just astronomical. And at the end of the day, somebody looked at the spreadsheet and said, no, it's worth our while to do this. Like, very worth our while.
Yes.
So it's immense.
So let's start off by putting BP, the well owner, up on the board. This is according to the New York Times, which came out in September 2011. BP, running weeks behind schedule and tens of millions of dollars over budget in trying to complete its troubled Macondo well in the Gulf of Mexico, took many shortcuts that contributed to the disastrous blowout and oil spill there last year, federal investigators concluded in a report released on Wednesday. The central cause of the explosion aboard the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig was a failure of the cement at the base of the 18,000-foot deep well that was supposed to contain oil and gas within the wellbore. That led to a cascade of human and mechanical errors that allowed natural gas under the tremendous pressure to shoot onto the drilling platform. The United States Department of Justice said the explosion of the rig was a disaster that resulted from BP's culture of privileging profit over prudence. sure. said Assistant Attorney General Lanny Brewer of the Justice Department's Criminal Division. The oil spill was catastrophic for the environment, but by hiding its severity, BP also harmed another constituency, its own shareholders and the investing public, who are entitled to transparency, accuracy, and completeness of company information, particularly in times of crisis. Good corporate citizenship and responsible crisis management means that a company can't hide critical information simply because it fears backlash. Time magazine said in September of 2014, U.S. District Judge Carl Barbier said BP was mostly to blame for the 2010 Gulf of Mexico disaster. Barbier attributed 67% of the fault to BP, 30% to Transocean, which we'll discuss later, which owned the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig, and 3% to Halliburton, the cement contractor. So it sounds like BP was definitely cutting costs. They were running behind schedule, and they had a lot of people to answer to financially.
Trying to make that money. You know what that sounds like?
Mm-hmm.
The big C. Yeah.
Big C, capitalism.
I'm putting it on the board.
Put that on the board.
Everything always just comes down to that. Like, and when they say, oh, we're running behind schedule, there's no just natural schedule here. You're making the schedule. You're right. Working with the people that are like, you control that. Like, it's not, well, we got to get it done. You got to get it done. You do it how you're supposed to do it. They look at it and they go, you know, we're so many millions behind schedule, and the potential money from the money that we're going to be making from this is like $30 million a week. Every week it's not done, but all you're doing is pushing that $30 million to the next week. You're going to mm-hmm. get the money. Mm-hmm. Like there's, right. the demand's there. It's like trying to, I guess it all comes down to like trying to beat that quarterly report, you know, of this quarter. So then I, you know, my stock's going, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yes,
shareholders. Do
we put shareholders and quarterly reports on the board?
Yeah, because it's a made up schedule, right? Like Craig was saying, it's not the, you know, the schedule should be the time needed to finish the job, right? So that's your schedule. And if you start, you know, trying to do something and you realize you're going to need more time, well, then you extend that schedule because that's how much time you're going to need to finish the job. Right? You don't just say, okay, well, let's just do it faster.
If you're trying to talk me into a world without deadlines, I am on board.
No. Right?
I have no interest.
The podcast will just happen naturally when we all find ourselves on a Zoom at the same time.
Yeah. I really feel like that's where we're headed. That's the oil that's spilling out of this podcast. And cover me in that shit, baby, because...
You know, it's true. If you think about this from an environmental perspective, too, like the Earth is on no schedule. Earth is just like being itself. It doesn't, you know, if you're going to do this thing that's potentially really damaging for the environment, like it doesn't need to be extracted at a certain time. Right. I mean, unless there's like some science that where pressure is really high at this point. So maybe don't do it then. But it's like in terms of like getting it done by November arbitrary date, like whatever.
Right. Where are the
I think
ones,
that all really does. I'm sorry.
No.
I was going to say, I think it really does come down to that. You know, we want to get it done this quarter. Like, it's all those quarterly reports. It's always making the profit for the quarterly report.
Right.
That's what drives it all.
Because your bonus counts on that.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And you could probably blame the stock market for that, too, because those quarterly reports, you know,
they're about investor confidence.
It's all about.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't know. NASDAQ or
this is incredibly
Dow
suspect. I read this NPR. So after they had been rescued, workers who survived the explosion on the oil rig were asked to sign form letters about what they had seen and whether they had been injured. Lawyers for the oil rig's owner, Transocean, requested that workers who had survived the blast sign the form in the wake of the April 20th blowout on the Deepwater Horizon. This was hours before the workers had been allowed to see their families. So they're holding all of the workers right after the disaster, and they're making them sign release forms.
Don't sign anything. I mean, like, that's so sus.
Yes. So now some of the survivors say that they were coerced and that the forms are being used against them as they file lawsuits seeking compensation for psychiatric problems and other injuries from the blast. The form that they had they made them sign had, quote, "I was here and it happened. I didn't see anything," or "I saw this and I was or was not hurt." It's a pre-printed form letter. The surviving rig workers was asked to fill in the date, his name and address, where he was at the time of the evacuation was ordered. Then there are the two paragraphs at the end. One says, "I was not a witness to the incident requiring the evacuation, and I have no firsthand or personal knowledge regarding the incident."
Craig's shaking his head. He's getting real pissed off.
It's just, I mean, to even think that you're going to be able to do that and not have people question, like, it's so gross. Like,
it is.
Oh yeah, you got like, and that system was in place beforehand. Like, oh, when this happens, you do that. Like, you get their signature. Like, it was all planned out. Like, they weren't just coming up with that. Like,
no, exactly.
If there's ever an argument that, I don't know if these rig workers were unionized, but like, if there's ever an argument for union, because like BP, they have all the resources. They had lawyers there in hours to make these people sign a thing that the workers are just like stuck there with no representation. Just like, and I guess I have to sign this to see my family. Like,
yeah, I can't. They won't let me leave until I sign this. That's not
crazy. I mean, just it's the balls that takes to do that is just,
there is a union, OWTU, which is the Oilfield Worker Trade Union.
Okay.
So there is. Let me look into this a little bit more, Clay. But there does exist one. I don't know how strong they are.
Let's also put Transocean up on the board while you're looking that up. This is the rig operator / the actual faulty blowout preventer. This is the New York Times. Blowout preventer is a 5-story structure that contains devices that allow well operators to maintain control of the well. Once oil, gas, or other fluids are flowing, various components of the blowout preventer can be used to seal the space between the drill pipe and the well bore. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Federal investigators say that the pipe running from the subsea oil well to the drilling rig through the blowout preventer, or BOP, buckled around the time a surge of natural gas from the well ignited. The pipe was damaged in such a way that the blowout preventer couldn't cut and seal it off, the board said. The buckling occurred because of big differences in pressure inside and outside the pipe, which ran through about 5,000 feet of water. December 2010, it was said, evidence is mounting that the blowout preventer may have been crippled by poor maintenance. Just want to pause there. Poor maintenance. Investigators have found a host of problems: dead batteries, bad solenoid valves, leaking hydraulic lines that were overlooked or ignored. Transocean had also never performed an expensive 90-day maintenance inspection that the manufacturer said should be done every 3 to 5 years. Industry standards and federal regulations said the same thing. BP and Transocean safety consultant had pointed out that the Horizon's blowout preventer, a decade old, was past due for inspection. So they recommend you do it every 3 to 5 years. It's a 10-year-old, device. They've never done the 90-day maintenance on it.
Greg, if you're not familiar, we have we've been promoting what we call a rebrand for maintenance on this show, because maintenance tends to have a very negative, like, chore-like quality to it. But we've rebranded this maintenance exclamation point. Like, it should be a fun thing that we love doing in the world.
I like it. Yeah.
So I definitely feel like maintenance is, I've already put it up on the board, but OMG.
More maintenance. Yeah.
10 Seriously. Years?
It's just so irresponsible.
Yeah. And when there is a maintenance schedule, the manufacturers, they always put, like, they err it on the side of caution. Like, there is some buffer built into that. So to go beyond the buffer, if when it says to change your oil every 5,000 miles, they know your engine's good for 8,000, but they just know that so many people are not going to do it at that. So they, oh, you got to do it at 5 to get you to change it by 8. That's just, I can put it off. They schedule that into the maintenance schedule. So to go that far beyond, it's just depressing, man.
Yeah.
There should be talk about, as Craig was mentioning earlier, these kill switches. There should be a kill switch on these oil rigs in the ocean.
If you don't do maintenance.
You can't drill anymore because you haven't done that scheduled maintenance that needs to occur in order.
Yeah. I mean, it's no different than a check engine light coming on, right? I mean, it comes into the disabling your car. I mean, imagine if your car was disabled when that light was on for so much time. It wouldn't do that because it's your own thing. They want your thing to break, so you gotta go buy a new car,
right?
Yeah, well, why wouldn't the valve shut and go, it cannot proceed until this may, that's not a hard thing to implement. I mean, it just shuts down until you do that.
The reason they don't do it is because it's 90 days, time is money, right? It takes 90 days for this maintenance, and it's very expensive, so they just put it off as long as they can. And who's to say that they're the only, this is what keeps me up at night. You think they're the only oil rig
not
that's
following their maintenance schedule?
Yeah.
Nope. Right. Right.
So when is it going to happen again? It's just a matter of time, right?
This is why when people are protesting, you know, these major projects, when when someone's doing a pipeline or someone's building a rig, and they give us all these assurances that, you know, no, we've learned from our lessons and we're going to really, it's like, how many times do you have to hear that? And how many times do you have to clean up a massive spill before it's like, you know, what can we ever believe?
The thing that always gets me is like, they will say, well, now, just to so you know, we have the most modern, it's better than the old oil pipeline because we have the most modern technology. And it just makes you think, well, like, that's exactly what you probably said in the 1970s when you built the last pipeline. Right? But obviously, modern technology shifts. So how can you possibly tell us that this like, 2022 was the year they perfected it. It's like technology for oil transfer is perfect now. So we're good.
There's like a reliance that people don't understand the technology. So they'll just trust the people who are like, don't worry, we know the technology.
Yeah,
like,
just say the words most up to date. Just say the word most up to date and you're fine.
Yeah, and the thing is, the technology, I trust you can do it. I have no doubt you can pull off whatever you're saying you're trying to pull off. It really does come down to what's the failure point because you're cheaping out on maintaining it. Yeah, you can do it. You can pull the oil. Right. That's incredible. That's amazing. Yeah. It's when it's the failure. It's not maintaining. Like, and I mean, that should be the thing. Even when people protest, it should be like, all right, at bare minimum, if we're going to lose this protest, you have to institute those kill switches to where if and when it does, it cannot proceed.
One of them should be like part of the inspection. You know, it's like, let a person who's on that side of the argument be or have a representative when they're doing their inspections to like really make sure they aren't allowed to cut those costs or something.
Mm-hmm. Right. Although I would even side with a more like cut and dry mechanical thing, because even when there's something on that side, it's like, you know, you're on that side and they like they fly you out there and they're like, hey, here's $1.5 million.
They wine and dine you. Oh yeah.
they just throw so much money. They're like, all right, well, it's going to cost $100 million to repair it, or we can give this dude $10 million, you know, in an account that pays them out, you know,
like, anything you want off the menu tonight.
See, that's,
you want surf and turf?
You want the surf and turf. You
humans cannot be trusted.
I know, you're right.
I don't care who it is. You're going to get to some corruptible point, man.
That's true. Yeah.
Just wanted to circle back to, we can maybe ask the guest expert on this. I was trying to find a union, but USW Local 5, which is the Steelworkers Union, they're handling the contracts negotiations, or some of them at least. So I'm not even sure there is a proper, like, I don't know, a block. Like, that's the one I was talking about before was actually the Trinidad and Tobago.
Wrong union.
Oops.
We'll ask the guest expert. But we should also put up, before we run out of time, Halliburton, the contractor / unstable cement that was used.
Right.
Halliburton had run a series of tests that showed the material was unstable in the weeks before the April 20th explosion on the Deepwater Horizon rig. Both Halliburton and BP were aware of the flaws in the cement slurry as early as March 8th, over a month before the spill, but never actually acted upon that data, according to the National Oil Spill Commission Chief Counsel, Fred Bartlett. The industry was has developed tests to identify faulty cement jobs in offshore wells, but BP and or Transocean personnel misinterpreted or chose not to conduct such a test at the Macondo well. Bartlett wrote, Halliburton and perhaps BP should have considered redesigning the foam slurry before pumping it at the Macondo well. So they knew.
Yeah. I read up a little bit about that, how it was like some sort of nitrogen injection, that the sole purpose of it was to speed up the set time of the cement. And like, so, I mean, it just all, you know, just all flows down. If we can get it done sooner, we'll make this much money. We'll give you this bonus. We'll give you this bonus. Every level is like incentivized to hurry.
Right.
You know, and it's, it's, and they're like, oh, well, you know, if we create this, you know, cement technology, we get this much of a bonus. And if it fails, we're not that responsible, which they were dinged. What was it? They said they were 2%, 3% at fault.
Oh yeah. The judge said it was 3% liable or whatever.
It's just all so depressing, isn't it?
It is.
It's just.
It's like,
it really is.
To think about this in another way, you know, like if someone's doing potentially life-threatening surgery on your body, like you don't want that doctor thinking like, well, if he gets through three of these surgeries in a day, then he gets a bonus. So you don't want him like rushing your body.
That's a great point.
I just feel speed like you surgery. Wanna, they should be do all of this should be like, with the utmost care and time and consideration, like there should be no money dangling at the end of anything important like this that would make you cut costs or cut corners.
Yeah. You know what? If you want to dangle the money, you dangle the money and go, every year this thing has no problems, no injuries, you get a fat bonus.
Yes.
Right. That's the money. Right. That's the money. There, put the money there. If you go 5 years, you each get $500,000.
And if there is a problem, you're paying back that bonus plus interest.
There you go.
You're right.
We solved it. We figured it out. I was bummed. I was bumming out for a second, but we just came over the top.
Like I'm telling you, you incentivize the safety, and you make it so fat of incentive. I mean, come on, what is this thing pulling out like $30 million a day or something?
Yes, yeah, right. Like, I mean, massive amounts.
I feel like we should just put money on the board because, well, like,
I was
going to
say
money.
Maybe cost cutting culture.
Sure.
Right. This is according to the New York Times. The executives are keen to keep the Horizon on track. In emails, BP managers, whose bonuses were heavily based on saving money and beating deadlines, kept asking when the well would be finished. BP has denied pressuring the Horizon's crew to cut corners, but its plan for completing the well kept changing, often in ways that saved time but increased risk. It's a new deal every time we get up. Jason Anderson, a 35-year-old tool pusher, complained to his father. So they're doing, I mean, what we suspected, they were literally doing.
You know what they should have? Like, because I realize I go to the gas station, I'm sort of indiscriminate, right? I just go out to any gas station, I don't really care. But they should have, like, a clear sign at every gas pump that says when the last oil spills were.
For that company? Or whatever,
like the oil...
Oil spills since 1977.
I would have to imagine. I mean, I remember when this happened, BP's name was like mud. Like everyone knew. It was like, man, I'm not going to BP. And remember when the Exxon, I don't know if you guys know that.
Exxon Valdez.
Yeah, that when that happened, nobody wanted to go to Exxon. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it had to have hurt their bottom line but then again, it's gas. So it's like, if I got to get gas, I got to get gas. You know, it's true. So
and
maybe it didn't hurt it, but if you have a choice of across the street, anyway. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's where I'm thinking.
The thing is, though, how many people remember, connecting Deepwater Horizon to BP right now? If you had to do a survey,
that's a good point.
People forget. Sure,
people
maybe
move
like,
on. That's the thing. You may remember, but then you're like, well, it was long ago. They fixed it. Like, I got to get my gas. Like.
People are thinking about kill switches in cars in Ukraine and stuff. They're not thinking about BP.
I know we have to start crossing things off the list soon, but I do want to mention our listener suggestion, which comes from @pinks 10th at Pink's 10th. And they said the inventor of the combustion engine. So oh, something wow. Craig could really get behind. Without it, we would not need oil to begin with.
Not entirely
so
true.
So there you go.
But I understand what they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I get the, but I think the internal combustion engine, the net benefit, I don't even know though, but on the net benefit of like, I mean, you kind of had to have it to feed people. You know, you're going to plow a field with animals? Like, you're not going to feed anybody.
If we were all farmers, we could all feed ourselves, I guess.
I think Pink's 10th actually comes up, you know, as a sort of like the engine as sort of a symbol for, I think we became car obsessed as a country, even in the world, worldwide, we have this weird car obsession. Whereas, you know, why does every house need two cars in order to achieve the American dream? You could sort of start to get into that. Because then you start to talk about public transportation, the lack thereof. I mean, we live in LA where it's like sad that, you know, people can't get around unless they have a car. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of say more broadly, just sort of car culture.
Well, wasn't oil being used before cars anyway to like heat homes and, you know, like for other sources of energy? You're burning
train?
It.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was kerosene. So it is related to that. Sure. I mean, but that does come out of oil. But what was it? Oh, yeah. What you mentioned about the car culture, you've seen Roger Rabbit. That's all about how the car companies destroyed LA by paying off politicians to, I'm saying this about Roger Rabbit.
I'm so glad you brought this up. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know the whole thing, how there used to be a train running right through Hollywood to Santa Monica and they ripped all the rails out because the car companies paid them off to turn it into roads and get people driving.
Is this real?
Yeah. Go watch
Roger Rabbit.
Because
it's crazy.
Because it's all about that. Like about how the car companies completely, and LA was kind of the birth of car culture, really. And it's all because of that. And they just pulled off the trains and made everyone, hey, you're independent, do your own thing. And then just roads everywhere.
So that listener suggestion actually is resonating here. Or maybe we develop it into car culture. Because I just looked up U.S. petroleum consumption by end use sector's percentage share of total in 2020. It was 66% transportation.
Oh, wow.
So U.S. consumption of petroleum, 66% is.
And I'm sure we're probably one of the highest countries in the world to use it.
I would think. I mean, China's probably right there now at this point. Right. I mean, yeah, I read something years ago about how much of the American economy is dependent on cars and building cars and oil. And when you think about it, I'm going through this list and it's like fabrics, plastics, glass, rubber, asphalt, oil. Like you go down the, and it's something, it's over 50% of our entire U.S. economy is in some way linked to the automobile in some way. All the textiles, everything being mined for, you know, everything. It all comes down to that.
That's why they talk about it all the time. It's so important about how well or not well a car company is doing and what they're coming out with.
The
miles per gallon that we're trying to regulate in order to become more green. Like it's pretty dominant
industry. So I feel good about our board. Why don't we take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the list.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
All right. Who is to blame for the Deepwater Horizon oil spill? Is it BP, capitalism, shareholders, quarterly reports, a also rushed schedule, Transocean, the rig operator / faulty blowout preventer, maintenance, Halliburton, money, stop dangling cash in our faces, cost-cutting culture, the inventor of the combustion engine, or car culture? Wow. You know what I don't see anything?
What?
You know where I don't see anywhere? A name of somebody's name.
I know. It's true. We don't have a single individual on here.
There was you can look it up, Chris. He was a British guy who was running BP at the time.
I just think it's kind of, that guy.
Yeah, and he was known, I guess he did an interview during the time, while the oil was still spewing, and they were like, what's your plan? Are you planning on doing anything to stop this? And he's just like, stop asking me that. Essentially, of course, I want my life back. There's nothing. No one who wants this to stop more than me because I want my life back. And of course,
poor guy.
That this major backlash.
Great quote.
I have a friend who lived in Florida at the time on the Gulf Coast working at a coastal restaurant, and it was just shut down and he during the summer, which is when they made basically all of his annual wages because that's when all the tourists were there, and he was just out of a job for a year.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah. And multiply that by tens of
exactly,
thousands.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just...
This is Tony Hayward.
And what was the fine that BP paid, $20 billion? Nothing. I mean, nothing.
Right.
That's...
Oh, no, they just put it in the ledger. It's just, oh, that's cost.
Right, you extrapolate,
business.
How many people and how much, the real cost. Like, it's...
Right.
$20
None
billion.
Of those people, saw that money. It just went probably for, the cleanup efforts.
Well, yeah,
you know?
Cleanup and, maybe a little bit of, coastal town, rejuvenation. Yeah. But everything, all the truckers who come in to deliver the supplies, now we don't need you. All the job, everything. It's
an entire economy.
Yeah.
And
it just is haunting in a way when you think about it. And I don't know. It's just the way things are constructed right now. It kind of also makes me think about the financial crisis in 2008.
Right.
Where, at the end of the day, nobody's responsible. Where are the heads? Who are the faces I can associate blame to? And you're just sort of left kind of shrugging, and you have these LLCs, which are just we're going to settle out of court and all that shit. And at the end of the day, you're just sort of so a bunch of people are, and now the economy's fucked and people lose their jobs and there's a recession.
Yeah.
And,
let's try to do this quickly.
Sorry.
Sorry.
We've got a job.
I'm glad you stopped me because I was going to come in with another 5 minutes.
No. Because I feel like we can fold a few of these things into each other. Like the inventor of the combustion engine can go into car culture.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I also feel like money, stop dangling cash in our faces, can fold into cost-cutting culture.
Okay.
I also feel like the quarterly reports rushed schedule goes into the shareholders, right? Because they're the ones benefiting.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
Which leaves us with still a lot to go through here.
I mean, I feel like you can fold, like, I don't know what into what, but maybe cost-cutting culture into capitalism.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I would put shareholders into BP, because the real big, you know, whales of the shareholders, you know, somebody who buys like, oh, I got 100 shares. I mean, you know, it's not that much. They don't have an influence as somebody who's got, you know, 2.5 million shares and has pull on the board of directors, which can go, you know, do this, cut the, you know, make me the money, you know.
Right.
The guy sitting home with an E-Trade account isn't, you know.
Right.
He's not responsible for this thing.
Yeah, right. Right. I mean, if you asked him, he'd be like, hey, I wanted them to maintain the well.
Right. It would be funny if there is a guy out there who had like $100 of stock in BP and he just like feels super guilty about the oil spill. Just can't leave the house.
Right. I'm sure.
Right. I bet there were some that dumped it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sure a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, too little late, but.
True. So BP, we've got up on the board, the owner of the well, capitalism, the big C, Transocean, which is the rig operator, slash the faulty blowout preventer. You know, it all kind of folds into that. Maintenance, Halliburton, which was a cement company, and car culture.
You know, we didn't talk a lot about the kill switch, the actual kill switch. And did we talk a little bit about that?
We didn't, because research? We can, but I'm not a scientist.
It's called the shear ram. Well, it was called the shear ram, right? And it was meant to sort of stop the oil. You know, they had a preventing, you know,
measure
system, measure, whatever.
Multiple, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of them. And they just all failed.
Yes.
The solenoids that lock the things shut were wired incorrectly.
Oh, that. Kills me.
Is that a maintenance thing, or is that just an incompetence thing?
Well, yeah, it's a maintenance. I mean,
if they had done any kind of maintenance, I mean, they would have realized that the batteries were drained,
right?
Because
right.
they were right. wasn't wired improperly, properly. Like yeah,
right. wired right.
Right.
And that was their backup. You know, if you don't check on the backup system, what are
and
you
the,
doing?
Yeah, and the fact that you have one backup system.
Yes.
One. I know, for something this one. Massive.
For one, really. Okay.
I know.
I mean, like, so, someone who's got like a house in the middle of nowhere has a generator. That's their one backup system. That's all you need is one when you're drilling oil 18,000
into the ocean.
That's a good point. And that kind of falls on the Transocean. The people who operate the rig and who, you know. So that falls into that. I want to take the Halliburton off of the, I mean,
okay.
the cement company.
Well, I mean, they're kind of a dark company all around.
Yeah, they are. But they were part of like a stew of bad things all poured into, you know, it's like, it wasn't like everything was perfect. Everything was maintained. No one was rushing, but Halliburton gave us some faulty cement.
Yeah, that feels like.
It's true.
Yeah, I mean,
What do we think here, Craig?
Well, I'm looking at the list. I'm going, all these things just trickle down from the pressure from the owner of the well.
Right.
Because it's all the money in it. I mean, because any one of these people, I bet the people who are maintaining it, whenever they spoke up, it was, hey, you want a job? Then shut your mouth. You know, and it's just every level. You want a job? Yes. Shut your mouth to appease the one on top. Which is where all the money trickles down from, which is BP. That's how I feel.
So it's almost like it's like that seems like a combination of perhaps the owner, but also just like corporate corruption, you know, like
greed. We don't have greed on the list. I mean, that's the
source of greed.
So what do we feel about? Perhaps we send a BP, right? Feels like sending BP, the owner of the well, to the alarmist jail. Feels right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sits well with me. Now, the question is, who are we going to slap? Who are we going to give the big slap to? Because for me, I think it goes down to maintenance, like, or lack of maintenance.
Right.
Which kind of folds the Transocean.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because the people who built it knew how to build it to work. So if you maintained it, like you when you go through the list of everything that failed, it's just because of maintenance. It would have worked right if you maintained it.
So then lack of maintenance from coming from Transocean. But, you know, you right. kind of fit the concept in there.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Something about it was maintenance. You know, they were talking, I don't know, this got a little technical, but we watched a video where they were talking about some kind of pressure that happens in the pipe that pulls up mm-hmm. the oil, and that it bends, and that prevents yeah. this yeah. shear ram or whatever from stopping it. So I'm not sure maintenance as much as design, because to me there's a bit of a distinction there, like the actual design, because I'm not sure you can technically maintain that, right? Like, how do you straighten out that?
Well, yeah, they pipe? Said it could have just been years of it going unnoticed, of a pipe that was already slightly bent.
I guess what I'm saying is my idea of maintenance is like routine checkups, and then also, you know, actionable tasks that you can do to provide these sort of support things. I guess that does technically they yeah. could have stopped it
and also sort of the backup system, pipe, I guess. I mean,
so maybe I'm talking myself in a circle here, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know how you would disassemble it to, you know, that's right. I don't know anything about that. But like when it comes to like, you know, aircraft maintenance, you don't wait for there to be a crack in the fuselage before you fix it.
Right.
Like they like do those electrical analysis and they go, okay, it is weakening here. It's not perceivable to the human eye or anything like that. And okay. I think that's, we probably watched the same video, because yeah, you wouldn't know. It looks straight and it technically right. is straight. It is straight, but on a molecular level, it's not. It's distorting. And so yeah, there should be some way of. But then again, what did they say? 9 years over on the maintenance?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So if you maintain the safety, over.
Yeah, if you maintain the safety systems, then you kind of don't have to worry that much about that pipe bending, because all the fail safes will stop it. So, but
right.
I like that. Well, okay. You talked me into it.
I think I'm going to call it.
Okay.
All right. Lack of maintenance from Transocean. You're getting the big slap. BP, the owner of the well, you're going to the alarmist jail.
Yes.
So, I mean, Americans and their car culture, we're looking at you. We've got our eye on you.
We've got our eye on them.
You know?
Well, I like cars.
I like cars, too.
We're coming for that Miata, Craig.
We're watching you, Craig. But thank you so much, Craig, for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for this terrible environmental disaster.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I mean, if there's ever anything I could participate in where I lay blame on someone else, it's always something I'm interested in.
Oh, it feels great, doesn't it?
And it really does. Yeah, yeah. There's something that I didn't fuck up.
It's true. You woke up today and you blamed someone. It's a good day.
Yeah. And thank you for also reminding us about how depressing this is. Every step of the way, you're like, this is just depressing.
You know, I gotta work on that. I carry a cloud. I gotta get better at that.
No, we need
fits
it.
Fits into this podcast.
We
that's
need
what
it. All right.
Well, thank you, guys. Really fun.
That was fun.
Thank you so much, Craig.
After the oil spill, in November 2012, BP agreed to plead guilty to felony manslaughter, environmental crimes, and obstruction of Congress, and pay a record of $4 billion in criminal fines and penalties for its conduct leading to the 2010 Deepwater Horizon disaster. In 2020, Francis Beinecke, a former president of the Natural Resources Defense Council, said, quote, 10 years later, the only thing that has really advanced is having the industry much more serious about well containment. While offshore drilling initially collapsed after the Deepwater Horizon spill, today, production has surpassed pre-accident levels by a few hundred thousand barrels a day. Nearly 12 years after the disaster, it is impossible to predict the ongoing long-term effects from oil spill exposure on marine life, the environment, and residents of the Gulf. Visit our website and let us know who you think is to blame at www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram @thealarmistpodcast and on Twitter @alarmistthe.
You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with fact-checking by Chris Smith and editing by Molly Hockey. Additional writing by Anastasia Kousakis. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Alex Paul. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith and the Erios Network. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Tillicum murders.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.